to turn to the 85th Psalm, Psalm 85. I want to read verse 6, a verse that we've preached from many times. Wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? The subject of the verse, of course, is revival. And though that is a commonplace subject amongst Christendom, the experience of such has become almost extinct. The psalmist begins this psalm, verses 1 through 3, by looking back upon where they once were, how that the Lord in His grace had intervened in their lives. So what he's doing is, in the first three verses, he is recognizing that they are a blessed people. And it is good for us to look back, upon where we were, where we were heading before God intervened. We were spiritually dead. We were at enmity with God. We were hopelessly lost, living in the filthiness and vileness of sin, enslaved and held by the binding power of sin, alienated from God, rejecting God, spiritually bankrupt, and on our way to an eternity without Jesus Christ. And God intervened and rescued us. We need to think back upon those things. We are a people that is blessed beyond words. But we must ask ourselves, are we where we could be? Are we where we should be spiritually? After contemplating the blessings and goodness of God toward them, the psalmist came to the painful realization that as the favored people of God, as the recipients of God's mercy and abundant goodness, they were not where they could be. They were not where they should be with the Lord. And he came to the realization that the Lord was not pleased. And as a result, he prayed in verses 4 through 7, "Turn us, O God of our salvation." Again, God was not pleased, and caused thine anger toward us to cease. Wilt thou be angry with us forever? He could feel the anger of God. Wilt thou draw out thine anger to all generations? Wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? Show us thy mercy, O Lord, and grant us thy salvation, or thy deliverance. What he's praying for here is a change in direction. Turn us, O God. He's praying for an improvement in their relationship with God, that God would turn His anger away. He's praying for a display of God's mercy. He's praying for a gracious deliverance. And all of these things are the features of what he prayed for in verse 6. Revive us again. In verse 6, there is a personal plea for God to revive His people. The plea, the request, is in the form of a question. Wilt thou not revive us again? It is in the form of a question, but it is a plea and it is a cry from the heart. The psalmist is pleading with God for a reviving, a pleading for a revival from God. Wilt thou not revive us again? It is a plea for God to act upon them in a particular way. It is a plea for God to do something to them. Revive us again. It is a plea for God to produce an effect upon them. It is a plea for God to send a miracle upon them. Wilt thou not revive us again? Most today have no concept of the extent and of the magnitude of what is being prayed for. Revive us again. Revival is something that is greatly misunderstood today. There's much talk in religious, quote-unquote, circles about revival. But the popular ideas of revival do not find support in the Word of God. Far too many speak of wanting a revival, but they do not want a disturbance of their comfort. They do not want personal and lasting change. They do not want to lose control of their lives. They want something that will not cost them too much. That's not revival. They do not want that which will insist upon 100% commitment to God. They want something that will make them feel good about themselves. Something that will not hurt their self-esteem. They do not want their lives turned upside down. Perhaps a change here, a change there, but we don't want our lives turned upside down. They want that which will allow them to keep up and in tune with the world. They want that which will not cause them to miss what they think the world offers. But this is not revival. This is not a God-sent revival. This is not a God-produced revival. And most of God's people, when they think of revival, they think of it in terms of collective, usually nationally or ecclesiastically. And without doubt, there is a great need for a collective revival. But we must always think of revival in terms of personal. Always. Because if enough individuals get revived, you'll have a collective revival. But people today want a collective revival without a personal revival, and that does not happen. So I want to speak today. What does revival look like? What does revival look like? Several months ago, we were sitting at a conference around the table, and one of the preachers, it doesn't matter, said, we were talking, and said that when he was in college, they gave an assignment, and whoever could explain the best, what does revival look like? And you explain it the best and in the shortest amount of words. And they went around the table, and people said, what does revival look like? And it came to me, and I said, well, I would have said this. See this? This isn't it. That pretty much sums it up. But what does revival look like? The very meaning of the word is indicative of a great and urgent need. The word revive is made up of two parts. Re, meaning again, and vive, meaning to live. So the word revive means to live again. It is re-life or life again. It conveys the idea of a restoration. It conveys the idea of a return. It conveys the idea of a recovery, to reclaim, to awaken, to arouse, to stir. All of this is part of reviving. To invigorate, to rekindle, to refresh, to replenish. These are the words that come to our mind when we think of the word revive. But all of those words speak of something that is very definite. Speak of something that is genuine. Speak of something that is visible. And speaks of something that can be easily confirmed. In other words, revival is real. But the very word revive implies that something has gone wrong. Something has gone wrong. The very word implies that something is amiss. Again, it suggests a great and pressing need. It presents a dire and grievous condition. It presents something that is dreadful. It presents a dreadful and lamentable condition. If somebody needs reviving, something has gone wrong. There is a dire need. You pull somebody out of the water that's drowning. They need reviving. Something has gone wrong. There is an urgent need. So the very word implies an urgency, a dire condition. And overall, God's people find themselves in such a condition spiritually. Amongst the people of God, there is an absolutely frightful friendship with the world. An absolutely frightful relationship with the world. There is an appalling adoption of the world's philosophies and the world's ideals. The attitudes of worldliness has gripped the hearts and the minds of the children of God and has taken hold of their lives to the point that the pursuit of worldly pleasures and possessions have taken precedence over spiritual matters. The idols of the world have crowded out God and His Word. Overall, the condition of God's people is that they have allowed the allurements of the world to dull their spiritual taste for the bread of life. I'm speaking overall. Overall, the condition of God's people is one in which they find spiritual things to be dull and tedious. And love for God is greatly lacking, resulting in a going through the motions with mere lip service and half-hearted devotion and contentment with a mere form of godliness. Worldly-mindedness, covetousness, prayerlessness, selfishness, idolatry, coldness, apathy, spiritual waywardness, pride, ingratitude, bitterness, wrath, anger, jealousy, pride, pettiness, spiritual immaturity, spiritual instability, habitual hypocrisy, do-it-yourself religion, emergency religion, all of these things have engulfed the lives of God's people. All of these things have become the norm. And it is a very dire and lamentable condition when God's people are more characterized by unbelief than they are faith. More characterized by worry than assurance. More characterized by frustration than peace and contentment. More characterized by discouragement and misery than joy. More characterized by doubt than conviction. More moved by the opinions of man than thus saith the Lord. More influenced and more impacted by the world's ways than the ways of the Lord. And it is a dire situation when God's people, the saved by grace, have filled their lives with religious platitudes rather than spiritual realities. They call Christ Master, yet they do not obey Him. They call Christ the way, yet they do not walk in Him. They call Him lovely, and yet they have very little attraction to Him. They call Him all in all, yet they are not seeking Him. They call Him King, yet they do not honor Him. These are all platitudes. But where is the reality? Calling Him Almighty, and yet not trusting Him. But thanks be unto God that for such a condition, there is such a thing. There is such a thing as revival. It does exist. It is real. And praise God that in a day when so many of the saved have had their hearts stolen and have fallen victim to the traps of the flesh, the traps of the world, and the traps of Satan, there is such a thing as revival. Oh, how we ought to be thankful that there is such a thing. In this day, when spiritual interest, spiritual enthusiasm, and conviction has been consumed by an antichrist world, and where there is more interest and there is more excitement in the world than in the things of God, there is such a thing as revival. And in this day when people are more willing to invest in the world than in the things of God, more willing to allow their children to be given over to the gods of this world than they are to raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, thank God there's such a thing as revival. In this day when priorities are in the world rather than in spiritual things, thank God there's such a thing as revival. I believe one of these days I'm going to preach on it if the Lord lets us, but I believe in generational curses. And I believe it's something that we do. Somebody has to change the course. We are creating generational curses. Few examples. You miss Wednesday night because you're going to a Little League game. You are creating a generational curse. Because while you're sitting at that game, whether it's your grandkids or your children or your neighbor's kids, it doesn't matter. You are teaching them that this is more important than the house of God. And they're going to teach their children the same thing. You are creating a generational curse. We need God to revive us so somebody will change the direction. Well, I don't want them mad at me. Get some backbone. Get some conviction and take a stand. Let them get mad. It's better than having a generational curse. And people do this and they're so ignorant. Well, I don't understand why, but they won't come to church. Pray for them. Oh, I'll pray. I pray that you get right with God. That you will quit putting all the other things ahead of the Lord. Creating a generational curse. We're getting off course. But we live in a day of generational curses. But thanks be to God, there's such a thing as revival. We live in a day where the matters of God have become stale and stagnant. Where people have quenched the Spirit of God for so long that it is a way of life to them. They come into the house of God quenching the Spirit of God all the time. And it's a way of life. But thanks be unto God. There is such a thing as revival. There is such a thing as a spiritual recovery. There is such a thing as a spiritual uplifting and a spiritual awakening, a spiritual stirring, a spiritual provoking, a spiritual push, if you will, from God. There is such a thing. Not only is there such a thing, it's possible. It's possible. You see, revival is not to be merely a topic of conversation. It's not to be merely a figment of our imagination. It's possible. It's real. It is something that we can personally experience and we can personally have. Revival does exist, and it is possible. That ought to get our attention. Not only does revival exist, and not only is it a possibility, but God's the source of it. So if we're going to have it, we've got to go to the source. God is the source of revival. Man cannot, he's been trying for decades. Man cannot manufacture revival. Man cannot give birth to revival. Man cannot create. Man cannot organize. And you certainly cannot legislate revival. People have been doing that for years also. Well, you know, you better go up in front of church and confess. You're legislating revival. You can't do that. And they do come up front and they just say what they know they have to say, but nothing has changed. Because you cannot legislate revival. God has to send it. There's no amount of human ability that can bring about revival. There's no amount of planning. There's no amount of methods. You cannot calculate it. There's no amount of expense that can buy a revival. This is something that comes directly from God. True spiritual revival will always be the work of God. It'll always be the result of the outpouring and the inner working of God. It'll always be the result of a stirring from God. It'll always be a result of an inner movement and exertion of God. When we pray, revive us again, we are praying, oh God, exert yourself upon me. Do we want that? Do we want God to exert Himself upon us? So the very fact that the origin of revival is from above ought to cause us to share in the heartfelt cry and plea of the psalmist, "Wilt thou not revive us again?" But how do we know when a revival takes place? What does it look like? Well, we know that since it comes from God, it's supernatural. Since it comes from God, it's something that is very dramatic. It's extraordinary. It's spectacular. It's electrifying. And it's imposing. In revival, again, what does revival look like? In revival, attention is drawn to above. In Isaiah 64, in verse 1, Isaiah 64, verse 1. Oh, that thou wouldest rend, split, tear apart the heavens. For the heavens to be torn asunder is something that is going to get your attention. It is something that is going to have an impact upon you. If God were to rend the heavens while we are sitting here, that would get our attention in a very alarming way. And in revival, God gets our attention in a very alarming way. If God were to suddenly rend the heavens, we would be immediately distracted from everything else. Immediately. We would immediately cease to think upon the earthly. We would immediately cease to think upon all the pettiness if God were to rend the heavens. If God were to rend the heavens, those who are entertaining themselves in whatever way in the pew, it would stop immediately. If God were to rend the heavens, we would not be talking about the earthly 1 minute after the services end. There's nothing more disheartening for someone to preach their heart out and then 20 seconds after the service, people are talking about the world. They didn't get it. And then they'll go home and say, "Boy, we had good services." No, you didn't. They had no impact whatsoever. None whatsoever. None. But if God were to rend the heavens, you wouldn't be talking about anything else. Nothing. It has your attention. You see, the problem when there is no revival is that services do end. They end. Come noon or 10 after or whatever time, they're over. It's like they never happened. Think about it. How many church services have we sat in and it's as if they never happened? Because we go from there and just do whatever it is that we do. It's as if they never occurred. That's not revival. But in a true revival, God not only gets our attention, He grabs our attention. He grabs our attention. So what does revival look like? It looks like people in the grip of God. It looks like a people that God has grabbed their attention in such a way that it will impact the rest of their lives. We're doing good today if it impacts their day. I mean, if it impacts 5 minutes after the service, we don't get that far. Oh, how we desperately need a reviving. And what's sad is people have spent their whole lives going to church this way. The service is in, and it's as if nothing happened, and they're used to it. That's the way it's always been. How sad. In revival, there is a sudden bursting forth of God. Again, Isaiah 64 and verse 1. Oh, that thou wouldst rend the heavens, and then notice, that thou wouldest come down. That is, the heavens are torn asunder, and God bursts forth. There's the visible presence of God. That'll get your attention. If God were to just burst forth in our midst, you won't even want to go home. It'll cancel your plans. The services will not end. They'll go on. So there's an outpouring of God. We see this several places in the Old Testament. Exodus 24 and 16, and the glory of the Lord abode upon Mount Sinai. We see there, Exodus 24 and verse 17, that it was abiding there on Mount Sinai like a devouring fire in the eyes of the children of Israel. They saw it. In Exodus 40 and verse 34, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. The glory of God has reference to His beauty. It has reference to His magnificence. It is something that we see. But not only is it something we see, it's something that we feel. We see it again in Isaiah chapter 6. The glory and the majesty of God's holiness filled the temple. And Isaiah saw it, Isaiah heard it, and Isaiah felt it to such a point that it shook his being. So what does revival look like? It looks like the glory of God permeating and penetrating. It's a breathtaking, awe-inspiring manifestation of God. Revival looks like a people who are made consciously aware of the presence of Almighty, thrice holy God. In revival, there is a disrupting display of God's power. Again, Isaiah 64 and verse 1, oh, that thou wouldst rend the heavens and thou wouldst come down that, and then notice that the mountains might flow down at thy presence. If the mountains begin to flow down, that's going to distract you. That's going to cause a disruption in your life. And in all revival, there is a disturbance, a God-created disturbance. Oh, there's a lot of disturbances today, but they're not God-created. A God-created disturbance and disruption, that the mountains might flow down at thy presence. Such would leave us awestruck, and such would disrupt your day, and such would disrupt your life, and such would have an impact upon your life. So what does revival look like? It looks like a staggering, God-caused disturbance and disruption. Are we praying for such? How many are willing to pray, God, disrupt my life? God, come down in such a way that you disrupt my life, disrupt my ways. Oh, God, turn my life upside down. In revival, and we've preached on this before, there's the life-giving breath of God. Ezekiel chapter 37, we'll not turn there, but Ezekiel is brought to a valley. That valley is filled with dry bones scattered everywhere. A picture of decay. We're told that it represents the deplorable condition that Israel had fallen into. As you read on in the chapter, you see that God miraculously brought the bones together. And He covered them with flesh. What does revival look like? It looks like God putting the pieces back together. And then following that, you see, because that's not enough, there still wasn't life. The breath of God, the life and the power of God moved through that valley of chaos, moved through that valley of mere remains of former life, moved through that valley of rot and death. And we read in Ezekiel 37 and verse 10, breath came into them and they lived. Decomposition and lifelessness is reversed. A miracle has taken place. You see, the breath of God is a miracle working power. It's presented that way all through the Scriptures. We see it at the Red Sea. God blew, water come back. We see it in creation. Psalm 33 and verse 6, by the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them by the breath of His mouth. So what does revival look like? It looks like the breath of Almighty God entering in and reversing spiritual decay. Again, this is something that you can feel. It's a power. It's a force. It is what we read there in Acts 2 and verse 2. And suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind. It filled the house where they were sitting. That also will get your attention. The sound of a rushing mighty wind. And what is that? It's the breath of God. So what does revival look like? It looks like the movement of God upon a people. The power and life of God sweeping through. You can't tell me, you'll never convince me, that if the power and life of God were to sweep through this building, that your day won't be changed. That your life won't be changed. In revival, there is the pouring of heavenly water. Isaiah 44 and verse 3, "For I will pour water upon him that is thirsty, and floods upon the dry ground." Hosea 6 and verse 3, "In revival God comes as rain. He shall come unto us as the rain." So what does revival look like? It looks like a mighty wind coming from heaven. It looks like water and rain being poured from heaven upon parched ground. And if God were to rain upon us, don't tell me that's not something you'll see and you'll feel. It's something that will cause a disruption. So this visible and felt outpouring of God results in many things. It results in a revealing of sin. In all revival, sin is seen in its true character. People are brought face to face with their sin. They are brought face to face with the sinfulness of their sin. They are brought face to face with the realization that my sin has caused a distance, has created a distance between me and God. And as a result, people are broken. What does revival look like? Well, at one stage, it looks like a broken people. People are broken. People are humbled. People are convicted. They're burdened. They're in travail of soul. And they grieve over their sin. What does revival look like? It looks like a people that has been brought to the ground before God, pleading out to God, "God, be merciful. God, be merciful." In all revival, there is an absolute hatred of one's sin. There is a confessing of sin, a turning from sin, a forsaking of sin, a fleeing from sin to God. In revival, if you listen, you can hear the chains and shackles of sin being broken. What does revival look like? It looks like chains and shackles all over the ground. It looks like a people that has been set free from the bondage of sin. It looks like a people that has been healed. Healed of spiritual paralysis. Oh, there are many today that are suffering from a paralysis far worse than any physical paralysis. A spiritual paralysis. In a spiritual paralysis, you might want to do something, but you can't. Just like a physical paralysis, you might want to walk, but guess what? You can't. No matter how hard you try. Spiritual paralysis. They want to pray. They try to pray. But they can't. Healed from spiritual blindness, spiritual deafness, spiritual muteness. Revival looks like a people that has been restored. It looks like a people that has been brought near to God. This visible and felt outpouring of God results in hearts being changed. Hearts that were filled with pride are humbled. And these hearts begin to tremble before God. hearts are warmed, hearts are made tender, and hearts respond to the voice and the movement of God. You can mark it down. If you go from here with a hard heart, you haven't been revived. Hearts that were so crowded, so packed, so distracted and pulled with the matters and ways of the world are now focused and absorbed with God and the matters of God. Hearts that were filled with their own selfish ways and agendas become submissive. Hearts that were unconcerned become passionate for God. They're filled with thanksgiving and praise. They're filled with peace and assurance. And hearts are filled with a song. Hearts are made to be dissatisfied with the status quo and are changed in the hearts that long to be more like Christ. Hearts that long to be more surrendered to the Lord. Hearts that long to be more obedient, to be more closely identified with the Lord. What does revival look like? It looks like a heart transplant. A heart transplant has taken place. Are we longing for such? This visible and felt outpouring of God results in lives being changed. Revival will make God and the matters of God a living reality. And we'll make God and the matters of God our life, our purpose. You see, revivals will remove the mere formality and the mechanical and give power. Revival will result in a resurgence of love to God. It will result in a loss of control of our lives. And it will move us beyond the status quo and run-of-the-mill Christianity. Aren't you sick of run-of-the-mill Christianity? Revival will change that. Revival will result in a rejuvenation of prayer life. Prayer to God will no longer be self-willed and filled with carnal requests. I mean, you look at the prayers of the Bible. Most of them are spiritual matters. They are praying about spiritual matters. You listen in to the prayers of ourselves today, and most of it has to do with carnality. Revival will fill people with a desire to worship. Will make them earnest in preparation for worship. Again, revival will move you beyond the church service. It'll move you beyond this service. Something's wrong. We've all been guilty. God smites my heart every time. Start talking about sports right after church service. Or hunting or whatever. How sad. How sad. It's as if the services didn't even happen. In revival, it'll change our attitude and practice toward the Word of God. It'll make it a delight to the soul. Spiritual taste will be restored. You see, revival will make God's people to be the men, the husbands and fathers they ought to be the women, the wives and the mothers they ought to be the citizens we ought to be the employers and employees that we ought to be the neighbors we ought to be the church members we ought to be. Revival will fill us with spiritual excitement and give us a greater yearning for the spiritual. Revival will always cause us to want to climb higher spiritually. So what does revival look like? It looks like a miraculous change in lifestyle. It looks like a renewed zeal and passion for the spiritual. It looks like a people with a renewed sense of purpose. It looks like a people hungry for God. It looks like a people seeking for the glory of God. It looks like something entirely different from run-of-the-mill Christianity. It looks like the beginning of a new day. In revival, there is the overpowering touch of the Lord. In Genesis 32, we read of God wrestling with Jacob. And God, with a purposeful touch from His hand, caused Jacob's hip to go out of joint, causing him to realize his own helplessness and nothingness. And in revival, God touches our lives. We are immediately made to realize I'm nothing. So much so that all Jacob could do was cling. That's revival. Revival looks like a people that have been brought to the realization that I cannot do it. I am nothing. And I've got to cling unto God. Lord, I'm not going to let go. I'm not going to let go. You may come into this building not holding unto God, but if a revival takes place, you are going to go from here clinging to God. Never wanting to go back to where you were. Clinging. Lord, I'm not going to let you go. Lord, I let you go before, but I'm not going to let you go. There's nothing. It's going to cause me to let go. That's revival. Looks like a God-conquered individual. Now, you can believe what you want, but it gives me pleasure to believe that Jacob walked with a limp the rest of his life. I don't know if he did or not, but I just like thinking he did. In other words, God had a lasting impact. God left His mark on Jacob. Let's be honest. The mark of the world is all over us. I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of the mark of the world that's upon my life. The world has left its mark. We need the mark of God upon our lives. And then lastly, Psalm 85 and verse 6, "Wilt thou not revive us again, that in order that thy people may rejoice in thee?" What does revival look like? It looks like a divinely enabled people. We live in sinful times. We need divine enablement. We cannot go out into the world in our own strength. We need the power of God in our lives. And revival enables us to go forth and to face Goliath. Revival enables us to go forth and serve God in these perilous times. It's not enough to talk about revival. It's not enough to talk about what used to be. That won't help us today. We need a reviving. We need a reviving. And the best place for any revival to start is me. Us individually. Because there isn't a single one of us that does not need reviving. There is not a single one of us that cannot be closer to God than we are right now. Not a one of us. It ought to shame us that we have wandered from God. And we do so, we wander aimlessly, and then one day you wake up and you think, where in the world is God? We need a reviving. So we need to ask ourselves, what does revival look like? It looks like a people overcome with heavenly joy. A people overcome with joy. Again, it's a sad day when we go from the house of God. Can't wait to get home to watch the football game or the baseball game or whatever, or to get to the restaurant or whatever. It can be anything. God help us. What if God were to come down in such a mighty way that just disrupted all of our plans? That's what we ought to long for. Every day, every time we come to the house of God, we ought to be praying, oh God, disrupt my whole day today. We ought to pray that every day. Do I know? Should I? Yes. I need reviving as much as anyone. Question is, do we desire? Do we long? Do we thirst for revival? Do we seek it? Do we seek it? Are we willing to cry out to God, Lord, revive me. Lord, revive me. Again, we can pray for one another. We ought to pray for one another. Which seems to me, when it comes to this matter of revival, we ought to begin with ourselves. Lord, revive me. Revive me. And then when you get right, you don't look back and think, well, I can't believe I was the only one. You ought to rejoice that God got a hold of you. Are we willing to beg and plead with God for God to turn our lives upside down? God help us. That God would send a revival that would go beyond the church services. That would go beyond. That would far exceed run-of-the-mill Christianity. It's sad today. God's people recognize that God has worked in their lives, and the first chance they get, they forsake the assembling of themselves. God gave me a job, and the very first Sunday they work. It's sad. It's sad. And it's sad today when people don't do things right. Whether it be marriage or having babies or whatever. And everybody thinks that they ought to be treated as the ones who did it right. I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. But that's the thinking today. Why? Because the world has left its mark upon our lives. Again, I'm ashamed that the world has left its mark upon me. Think like the world sometimes. But oh, that God would rend the heavens. That God's presence would burst forth. That the mountains would flow down. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song. Brother Larry's coming.